Tall Ships America, and you are listening to A Bark, A Brig, and A Schooner Walk Into A Bar, the mini episode. Nick and I will be alternating quick interviews and short history lessons. First up, Captain Jamie Trost. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Captain Jamie Trost, for being here for our very first mini episode. I am going to fire like 12 questions at you, kind of get to know you, and then it's kind of a preview for season two of the podcast.
Yeah, I'm already. It's a pleasure to be here. Going first makes me feel like an explorer.
All right, are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, what is your idea of perfect happiness?
That is such a loaded question. And I guess, is there such thing as perfect happiness? Grasshopper is the first answer that comes to mind. But I think perfect happiness is more just a general contentment with things. I think that the idea that there's a pursuit of happiness mars the idea of happiness. So it's maybe if I visualized it, it would be some cabin in a old growth forest near sunset in the twilight with a fire going and a need for nothing else in the world.
Ooh, I like that. That's very picturesque. Thank you.
I try.
What is your must-have when you are packing to get underway?
I mean, outside of my own store of coffee, because I don't think it's a secret in the fleet that that ship coffee is it was produced by the lowest bidder. Outside of that, I need to have some sort of interesting book on board the ship, or I will lose my mind because there's some long empty spaces out there.
What is your favorite journey?
Also, do you want the Buddhist answer, the tall ship answer, or the the Buddhist journey is your favorite journey is the one that we're all on together, right? But if you think if this speaks specifically to some sort of tall ship passage, I would say hands down the trip into the Great Lakes through the St. Lawrence River is the most fascinating one to me. To think you can start at the ocean and get to essentially the heart of the continent, not just on the ships we sail, but on something massively bigger than that. It's pretty fascinating.
What do you consider your greatest achievement?
Graduating from kindergarten? I'm not sure.
All right, that's it. No more. Not accepting any more answers.
I actually, this one is not at all ship related, but I have the privilege of being on the board of an organization as this scrappy little non-for-profit grassroots organization out of Charlottesville, Virginia called Wild Virginia. It was started by students at UVA who were intentionally getting themselves arrested to have a public record that there were protests to the clear cuttings in the two national forests in this area of Virginia. And that organization is focused on environmental advocacy. And this summer, after a five-year total fight, we shut down completely construction of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, which was going to endanger thousands of tributaries and streams to the Chesapeake Bay and subsequently then potentially harm the drinking water for millions of people in Virginia, Maryland, and the other states in the watershed.
That's awesome. I literally have chills.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. And the greatest news of that, my role in it was largely that I write the appeal letters for the organization and some of our communications stuff. But there's a huge, we're just one organization involved, but there's probably less than 1,000 total people involved in this effort on the absolute front line.
Oh, that's incredible.
And we got the news on my birthday, so.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
The best news.
You're saving lives, saving trees.
Trying to.
Okay, if you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
I mean, the segue is clearly I'd come back as a tree.
Obviously.
I do think about that, though. And in fact, tying into this, we had a piece at a film festival back when we used to be able to do things in person. We had an in-person film festival for Wild Virginia. Now they're all online. The last in-person one featured a great movie it tied together a bunch of different tree stories. But one was about the bristlecone pines in Sequoia National Park. They're out in the Sierra Nevadas, and the idea that they've survived for 4,000 years in the same place, and just the sentience of, like, that's a living creature, right? We forget about because trees don't move around in the same way that, unless you're reading Tolkien, in the same way that people do. We forget that this is it's a lifespan that's outside of our understanding completely. I mean, 4,000 years, we know what the number is, but mm-hmm. we don't understand what it's like. And these trees have survived for that time, having to adapt in place, which I think the movie came out and I saw it before the pandemic started, but the whole, like, the idea of in place now has much deeper meaning to anyone who's lived through the global pandemic of 2020. Those the bristlecone pines to survive in place for millennia and more is a pretty fascinating. I'm not sure that I'd want to do that, but I'm fascinated with the idea of it.
Okay, that's all right. Well, I won't hold you to it.
When that technology comes to be, I would like to reconsider before my final answer.
What is your most treasured possession?
I saw this ahead of time and was, this is a tough one. I think it's not something that is an everyday part of my life these days, but I studied Japanese archery or Kudo in 2 years that I lived in Japan with this, Haneda sensei was this little old Japanese guy who didn't speak much English, loved country music, and would was surprised that I didn't like country music also. But our kudojo, our practice area, was behind that elementary school, sort of surrounded by some matsu pines, and the practice was every Saturday night for most of the year at 8 o'clock at night. And so it was lit. The targets were lit. The dojo itself was lit. And so pretty big commitment on, you know, like the middle of the weekend to Saturday night to do this. But I practiced it for 2 years, and I took EQ, which is the rank just below black belt. They don't really have the sort of lower than black belt ranks that we associate with the martial arts in the States. In Japan, they don't use them. So EQ is the first rank, which is just below the lowest black belt. So I took that before I left. And not long after that, Haneda sensei asked, was I going to continue to practice? And I said, I'd love to. He asked if I had a bow and arrow. And I said, well, I have a Western style bow and arrows. And he says, well, that's not right. And he gave me as a going away present his own personal kumi or bow and a set of 4 matched arrows.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible.
And that's actually, you can see it's in the red case on the wall up top there.
Oh, that's so neat. Yeah.
There it is. A Western style bow underneath it.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Okay. All right. We'll get into that in season two. Who are your favorite writers?
How long is this list?
I know, right?
I'd say top five that I could give you are Haruki Murakami, who is one of Japan's most renowned authors. If you haven't read anything about him, you should. He's amazing.
I have, and it was a little traumatizing, but that's something we can talk about online.
Oh, great.
I was 20. I have very vivid memories of it and things I can never unread. And
which book?
Oh, it was something about a bird.
The Wind Up Bird Chronicle?
Yes, The Wind Up Bird Chronicle.
That's actually on my list for the new year.
Oh, it is.
Interesting.
I should reread it. I was traveling in Europe at the time, and I was looking for the biggest book I could possibly find. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, and I was like, this looks challenging, and I was like, oh. So.
Wow. Interesting.
I know, but that was the only book I've ever read by him, and I should try to reread maybe something else. But anyway, carry on.
Thomas McGuane. Is still alive. I don't know if he's still writing, but he has written a number of novels and essays about the outdoors and the sort of pursuit of everything from sailing to big game hunting to horseback riding and ranching. He was best friends with Jim Harrison, who passed away about 4 years ago. Jim Harrison is probably most famous for being the author of the novella Legends of the Fall that became the sort of breakout Brad Pitt movie.
Yep.
Ursula Le Guin, fantastic sci-fi and fantasy mm-hmm. high thinking, astounding writer and envisioner of worlds in very few words often. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then Ivan Turgenev was a Russian author from the turn of the end of the 19th century, I guess. And he wrote a great deal about sort of the same sorts of things McGuane writes and Harrison wrote about, the sort of outdoor world and what it was like to sort of travel and live in this in pre-communist Russia out in the wilderness.
Okay. You have one more.
I think that was five.
Was it? I'll give you one more just to be nice.
One more. Oh, boy. who else? The last one, this person sadly died really young, just a couple of years ago. Tony Horowitz has written a bunch of great books of exploring historical journeys. So the first one of his I ever read was Blue Latitude, which was subtitled Boldly Going Where Captain Cook Has Already Been. So. And he tied together.
I didn't realize he passed away.
He did. He was here in Virginia, where I'm living now. I think 2 years ago.
Oh,
pretty sudden.
I'm sorry
I think
to
it
hear
was
that.
A heart attack or something. Yeah.
Oh, he was lovely. I love his writing.
And he had another one called A Voyage Long and Strange, which was very. He hilariously ended up in Plymouth, Massachusetts, in the middle of summer, on a road trip, and went down to see the Rock, and was suitably unimpressed.
Well,
but also listened to the Ranger for a little while, fielding all of these questions from people who were so confused as to why it said 1621 on the Rock when Columbus landed in 1492. And
legitimate question.
was just baffled at this idea that people seemed to think that Columbus had brought the pilgrims over and dropped them off. And then himself, Tony himself pondered that his own knowledge of what had gone on between 1492 and 1621 in the Americas was pretty hazy. So he, like most of his books, he contrived to make a number of journeys. So he went to the Caribbean islands in search of the places Columbus had landed. He did road trips following Cortez and De Soto. Did just travel to all the places. Went to Newfoundland, of course, to sort of kick it off with the Lancet Meadows Viking colony up there.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was just fabulous, A Voyage Long and Strange.
Oh, I'll have to revisit him. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, who is your favorite hero of fiction?
Hero of fiction. I'll go back to Ursula Le Guin and her envisioned sorcerer turned archmage turned sort of island hermit of Sparrowhawk or Ged in the Wizard of Earthsea series is a pretty fascinating character.
Okay, all right. When and where were you happiest?
I mean, this assumes I ever was, Erin.
It does. You can pass on it. You're in a perpetual state of finding happiness.
I don't think I'm not going to pass on it. But I think that it's probably true that we're all in this links into that earlier question we had about what is happiness. I was thinking, okay, so now that I think about this, there was a time when this would have been the winter of 2004 turning into 2005. And Kathy and I were living on Peaks Island, Maine, which is a short ferry ride, like 15 minutes. I guess 20 minutes off the coast of Portland. And we lived in this house that we were renovating, which I guess is a common theme. And it was heated with a wood stove. It was a bitter cold winter in Maine. In fact, the whole month of January, it never got above 20 degrees. So Casco Bay was frozen. The ferries were doing light ice breaking every morning on their routes. I was working for a company that had an old Alden schooner they were restoring. So we were in this unheated barn. And so basically it was everywhere except next to the wood stove was kind of frozen. I was learning a ton about the process of taking apart and putting together a classic schooner. There was a hardiness to living out in in this island off the coast. And I think even more tellingly that we did not have a computer. That was the last time I remember us not having a computer in the house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I read a ton. I walked around the island in the snow a whole bunch and, and did this like, you know, honest, hard day's work every day.
It does sound idyllic. Cold, but idyllic.
Like cold, but idyllic, right?
Cold, a little bit miserable, but still pretty idyllic.
Yeah.
All right. What is your most marked characteristic?
Whew. Adaptability, I guess.
Okay. All right. I'll take it. What is it you most dislike?
Wow.
All right. You're like, now well, here's my list. I have index cards.
What day of the week?
What do I most dislike?
I'm sure there is a succinct word for it. And maybe tyranny sounds too strong, but I most dislike when people who have authority or power or a privilege in this case abuse those gifts at the expense of people who don't. Like for instance, with this pipeline, the one of the reasons we were so overjoyed to shut it down is that the strategic planning process for it, for all that we could tell, basically just rooted it through the poorest counties in Virginia who would have the least means of making any sort of legal stand against it.
That's awful.
That's where we stepped in.
What is your motto?
What is my motto? Huh. I don't know if I have one. I think it's Jeff Goldblum's first ever scene on film in Woody Allen's movie, Annie Hall. And he's at a party that Paul Simon's character is throwing. This is a ridiculous parody of a 70s LA party. And there's just this one moment where Jeff Goldblum's on the phone and he says, yeah, can you get my agent? I forgot what my mantra is.
Let's leave it. That's good.
So maybe I forgot what my motto is.
You're like, where's Kathleen? Kathleen, what's my motto? All right, well, that's all the questions I have. So thank you very much, Jamie, for joining
Absolutely.
Me today for our mini episode. Stay tuned in season 2, where I will dive into more of your answers.
Oh, boy.
A Bark, a Brig, and a Schooner Walk Into a Bar is a Tall Ships America production. The music provided by Kebab Studios. You can find us in all the usual places, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Tall Ships America, and on our website at tallshipsamerica.org. Send us your sea stories or drop us a line at manager@tallshipsamerica.org. As always, be sure to support your local tall ship.